If this was Kadar, I'd have you whipped in the street and fed to the pigs. The sellsword produced a knife. Lee's knife, he realized, the one he'd had sheathed in his waistband. He hadn't felt Randall take it. He flinched away from the blade as the sellsword leaned in and sliced a single black lock of the thief's hair just below his ear. He dropped it in the runnel, and it swept between the green copper bars of a nearby drain and out of sight.
I see you again. I cut more than your hair.
What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off. The spider and another one of the brethren strike a deal to cut each other in on their business dealings on condition that Kingmaker hands over Hatham's head on a spike. That's a pretty massive spoiler, so if you haven't caught that episode yet, you can check that out down in the episode description where I'll have a link to a playlist with every episode up until this one, along with links to a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. Alright, that is enough out of me. I will catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. Lee shuffled up the stairs, the stitch in his ribs flaring to a white-hot poker with every step. He was on the mend. Better every day, he told Paul after her seventh time asking how he was faring, but the mending was taking its sweet time, for he still couldn't put his breeches on in the morning without a wave of pain and nausea surging through him. He'd held on to the little snuff box of smelling salts, and he kept them in his pocket just in case he felt faint. Thankfully, he was off the laudanum. The narcotic had given him deep and dreadful nightmares, then weighed down his sleep so that he couldn't escape. The nightmares hadn't yet subsided, but his sleep was thin and fitful enough that when the jackdaw forced his way into Lee's dreams, red-eyed and ravenous and wreathed in flames, the thief woke with a sweaty, shivering start. Sleep was always slow to come back after. Paul had protested vociferously when Lee told her he was going back to his apartment above the smithy. Lee was adamant. She needed the room back for the boys, and he needed to be up on his feet fetching his own breakfast. They'd argued about it right up until he left, and she'd only relented when he agreed to come back twice a day for a turn so she could reapply the poultice to his cheek and brow.
"The potter blessed you with a beautiful face," she'd chided him. "I won't have you going around the rest of your life looking like some dreadful pirate."
"I don't know what you're on about," Lee replied, wincing as she slathered his cheek with the foul-smelling yellow ointment. "Phillies love scars."
"Any woman who'd rather have you with your face all ruined is not a woman what's worth your time."
Even with their compromise, Paul was undaunted.
"It's already dark,"
she told him as she laid the last strip of linen over his brow.
"Why don't you go upstairs and have a lie down, and I'll fix you something to eat."
He thought about the alternative, the other stale half-loaf of bread that was waiting for him back at the apartment, or else whatever was congealing in the pot at the dram house. Paul would have had an absolute fit if she'd known where he was spending his night since he left hers.
"I'm not staying the night,"
he told her as she ushered him toward the stairs. "Of course not," she winked before she whisked off to fix him supper. He steadied himself on the railing as he climbed the stairs that mostly didn't creak. He was still getting used to the new place. He'd known the mismatched house like the back of his hand, which windows slid open easily from the outside and which floorboards creaked so you knew where to step when you came home past midnight. The new place was big and sturdy and located right at the edge of the Golden Quarter, so there were never any milk chasers sprawled in the gutter outside. He'd loved that old relic. Of course he was grateful, and he hadn't yet had the chance to thank the spider for his largesse. But it had been the mismatched house where Paul had taken him in, hungry and feverish at 13. It had been the mismatched house that had been his oasis amid all the roiling chaos of the streets and the coppers. It had been the mismatched house where Lee became a man, as much as he was one. He missed it, and he could tell that Paul did too. Not that she'd admit as much. She dismissed it when Lee tried to apologize not long after waking up.
"Cirrus gives and he takes in his own time," she'd said simply, as if that settled it.
He wished he believed her. He wasn't sure she believed herself. Every so often, as he was coming down those sturdy, silent stairs, he caught her sweeping, staring at nothing as the broom swished back and forth mechanically on one spotless strip of hardwood. She looked like she'd aged a 7 years since the jackdaw, although she was careful to hide the purple-black bruises that mottled her arms. How much worse would it have been if Haytham hadn't come when he did? He'd gotten the story in bits and pieces, starting on the rooftop with Willy and Vig. Lee's own memory of that night, besides what came back in his dreams in flashes of awful clarity, ended with him still waiting in the belfry. Paul refused to talk about it, so what he did hear was filtered first through the active imaginations of a dozen boys under 12. Lee had been waiting for the brawler to come see him so he could hear what happened, stripped of all its boyish embellishments. But up till now, he'd stayed away. He wanted to thank him, wanted to hear what had happened with White Rose. As he'd been gradually building up his endurance, hobbling twice a day from Paul's new place to his apartment, he'd seen the letters signed Blackbird nailed to every notice board on every street corner. So they hadn't gotten White Rose. But why not? And what was the new plan? And why the letters? And why were the brawler and the spider avoiding him? He had one memory, at least what he thought was a memory, one tattered sliver that surfaced in his dreams, and when it did, was worse than any specter of Killam and his brutes. It was the Reaper standing over him, staring down at him with awful judgment, and when he saw it, Lee found he couldn't move, couldn't hide from that cold iron gaze like a spear thrust. It was that, more than anything, which made Lee want to see him, and made him afraid. He was halfway up the stairs to his old sick room when a voice like birdsong caught him.
Starry-eyed starling, where are you gone to? Remember, my darling, you sang in my hand. Day bright is starting, starling I long to. Remember the name song you sang on the strand.
It was Paul's song. The old lullaby that all of her boys had stamped indelibly in their memories in the 30-some years she'd kept her light on. But it wasn't her voice. It was a young woman's voice, clear and bright, and Lee found himself drawn to its sound like a moth to a candle. The door to the boys' room was slightly ajar. Lee filled the narrow gap of the doorway, the lamplight inside painting a golden sliver that ran from his brow to his chin over his one good eye. Like everything else at the new place, the boys' room here was much larger than that of the mismatched house. The dozen bunks were stacked three high, and each one had a small chest to its side with three drawers for each of the boys to stow his meager effects. There were only maybe 10 boys tucked on their cots. He saw Sim's shock of red hair nestled at the top of his coverlet, and several of these were wide-eyed, staring rapt at the woman on the rocking chair. She was blonde and lovely. And she struck some chord of recognition in Lee's heart that made it flutter, one that he couldn't quite place. She sang Paul's song with an easy familiarity, gently rocking in the chair as the three-year-old sitting on her lap, Paul's youngest, dozed, drooling slightly on her shoulder. He knew who she was. Sim had told him breathlessly about Haytham's girl who'd been coming by to help set the new place in order. He wouldn't say it, but Lee could tell that he loved her with the relentless intensity known only to boys of 9. He wasn't the only one. As Lee's gaze flicked to each of the boys sitting on the edge of his cot with his chin propped on his hands, he knew that if she ever lost interest in the brawler, she'd have a long list of suitors under 12 eager to hold her hand. She sang until all the boys had fallen asleep, several still sitting up with their chins on their chests. She went to each of these in turn, tipped him onto his back, pulled his coverlet up to his chin, and planted a kiss on his forehead. He couldn't be certain, but Lee suspected that several of these were feigning sleep. "You're awake," she murmured as she completed the ritual with the last boy. It was a moment before he realized she was talking to him. She scooped a close-fitting woolen shawl off the rocking chair and met him in the doorway. "How long?" It took him a while to remember how to speak.
6 days,
he mumbled as he retreated from the doorway and her vivid green eyes.
How are you feeling?
She pulled the door closed behind her with a soft click.
Better every day, he meant to say, same as he'd told Paul. What came out was, honestly, like I fell off the stone bridge.
She didn't say anything, and when Lee glanced up, he saw that her eyes were closed and she wore a vaguely pained look.
I'm Lee, he muttered. I know, she replied. Amitha, I'm a friend of Haytham's.
I know. He glanced down the stairs to be sure the old woman wasn't padding up after him and dropped his voice a fraction. "Do you know where he is?" He wouldn't quite meet her eye. "I've been looking for him." She shook her head. "He was coming by a lot before you woke up. I think he's busy working." He studied her face carefully. How much did she know? "Well, if you see him, would you tell him Lee's looking for him? I don't know if I'll be seeing him for a while," she admitted. She saw the crestfallen look on the thief's face and quickly added, "But I'll tell him." Lee nodded and thanked her. The strong smell of garlic and onions rose to greet them from downstairs. His stomach rumbled, and Lee started quickly down the stairs so she wouldn't see the color rising to his cheeks. Amatha hadn't left the doorway. "I know you don't know me," she called after him, catching him halfway down the stairs, "but if you'll hear the advice of a stranger..." Lee turned and waited for her to continue. She peeled herself out of the doorway and followed him to the top of the stairs. "I think you'd do well to stay clear of him for a while," she murmured. "He's a good man, but the people closest to him tend to get hurt." She motioned to the side of Lee's face that was swaddled in bandages. He felt his face flush hot. This had nothing to do with him.
"Sure,"
she nodded, her hands upraised. "I just meant, you look like you've been hurt enough. That's all." She wore a sad smile as she started down the stairs, brushing past him. He caught a whiff of cinnamon hovering on the air in her wake. "Name Survive, Lee," she told him as he trailed her down the stairs. "Thrice over," he heard himself say, knowing that her advice was sincere and already discarding it. The air in the cellar was warm and thick with the pickled tang of sweat and bodies. Lee took a sudsy pull from his tankard, washing down the lingering garlic taste. He was grateful for the supper Paul had fixed him, vegetables boiled until they were soft as butter. He'd lost two teeth at the hands of the jackdaw, and anything tough or stringy that abraded his scabbed gums was liable to set his whole mouth bleeding. One of the fighters went down, and the whole cellar erupted in cheers as coin changed hands. Lee hardly noticed. He wasn't here for the fight. He was perched on a barrel with his back to the stone wall, high enough that he could see every face in the crowd and 6 steps from the back door in case he needed to bolt. His hood was drawn, and as he lowered his tankard, he pulled the black headscarf he was wearing up over his nose and mouth. Tonight, he intended to remain invisible, to his friends and his enemies alike. It was the fourth night since he'd left Paul's, the fourth night since he'd taken up his lonely post in the cellar, watching the fights with one eye while his other scanned the crowd for any sign of his quarry. This was the same grog shop where he'd first found Red Ugly, and he'd harassed the barman for half the first night before he admitted that the spider's man came round once a turn or so.
"If you stick around long enough and keep buying drinks," he'd added, his eyes flashing, "you'll find him eventually."
He'd considered recruiting Vig and a few of the older boys to help him canvass more fighting pits, but he'd quickly abandoned the idea. For one thing, they wouldn't know who to look for, and for another, he wasn't such a fool as to risk any of Paul's boys' necks tailing the Kadari back to whatever crypt he slept in. Just his own. It was his only way of finding the brawler. If the Gray Man had moved him from the Eidolon, and Hatham's girl didn't even know where to find him, or if she did, she didn't seem keen on telling Lee, then that left the Halfpenny Spider. Trouble was, Kingmaker was even harder to find than the brawler if he didn't want to be found. And that left Randall. Which, to be frank, scared him more than anything. There was no love lost with the sellsword. Lee knew full well that the Kadari would as soon gut him as look at him. The only thing which had stayed him until now was the singular interest that the Gray Man had taken in Lee. If that interest had waned, and he had nothing but the spider's silence to say that it had, but that silence was loud and heavy with implication. Devil only knew whether the sellsword would show that same restraint if he caught Lee alone with nowhere to run. He didn't have another choice. Besides, perhaps, stalking the winch lifts, waiting for White Rose to poke his head out of hiding so that Lee could interrupt another attempt on his life. Cirrus above, if he was going to keep playing the Lordling's bodyguard, he ought to start taking wages. The compromise he'd made with himself was the knife and the headscarf. Sure, with the poultice already over one eye, the scarf only further blinded him, and it made breathing the sour, soupy air of the cellar through his broken nose next to impossible. Plus, he'd have a hard time swinging the knife blind with one of his hands bruised and swollen and the other a mess of oozing blisters. But it was something. And after 3 days sitting on the hard barrel, swigging whiskey to stave off the rising discomfort in his cracked ribs, it was perhaps the only thing that shored up his flagging resolve. The chatter in the crowd lulled as two fresh fighters lumbered into the pit and the ringmaster started up his crowing, brandishing an iron lockbox in both hands. Pennies clattered into the box as the brawlers slapped hands and retreated to their respective corners. 6 steps behind him, the cellar door crashed open. Lee looked and his blood ran cold. He was outside himself and everything was burning. He'd seen them in his nightmares, two hulking bruisers flanking the jackdaw, but their faces had been shadowy and indistinct. With horrible clarity, he saw them standing over him, kicking knives into his ribs, dragging a thrashing, screaming Sim down the stairs of the mismatched house. The tankard slipped out of Lee's grasp and clattered across the dirt floor. Someone in the crowd cursed as mead splattered his boots. His pulse thudded in his ears. He pushed himself off the barrel and dropped into the press of bodies. They hadn't seen him yet. The Jackdaw's thugs shoved their way to the front of the crowd and slung a fistful of silvers into the lockbox. He couldn't stay. He couldn't breathe. Lee's vision swam as he waded through the crowd like a man in his cups, steadying himself on the shoulders of the onlookers, mindless of their scowls and murmured curses as he staggered past. Someone shrugged him off, and he caught an elbow in his ribs. Lightning stabbed through him. His vision flickered black, and the dirt floor rose to meet him. He gasped and nearly faded as a pair of powerful hands caught him by his lapel, his tunic squeezing his cracked ribs and forcing the shallow breath from his lungs. He looked up through one eye that was bleary with tears and met the deep water gaze of the spider's man. The Qadari wore a thin crease in his brow as he pulled the thief to his feet. He said something, but Lee couldn't hear him over the cheers of the crowd as the fighters came together and the thunder of his own heart. He mumbled some excuse about one pint too many, wriggled out of the sellsword's grip, and stumbled up the steps to the cellar door. The air outside was deliciously cool. He ripped the headscarf off and sucked in greedy lungfuls, pain lancing down his side with every breath. He could feel himself fading, and he fumbled for the snuff box in his pocket. The pungent piss smell of the salt slapped his senses back into him. His heart hammered, and black oblivion receded. The sellsword hadn't recognized him. Lee stumbled halfway down the alley before he realized that no one was coming after him. Even from here, he could hear the muffled cheers of the crowd reverberating through the cellar door. Even so, he almost fled. Cold sweat dotted his chest and brow, and his heart still raced like a bird battering its wings against cage bars. But he didn't have a choice. This was what he'd come for, wasn't it? He hadn't staked out the cellar for days just to be scared off by a couple of iron penny thugs. It was that or cut his losses and any hope that remained of finding the Reaper. So he stayed. He drew his cloak gingerly about his shoulders as the night chill set in, and he tucked himself into a dark alcove. He kept his hood bowed and his gaze trained on the cellar door, from which the steady rumble of the fight and the crowd continued to emanate like far-off thunder. He was waiting for at least an hour. By then, the stitch in his ribs had settled into a dull, relentless ache, and he'd been blowing fog into his hands to keep them warm, quietly regretting that he'd let himself be scared into fleeing the cellar. The door smashed open and the crowd poured out. Lee snapped out of his stupor and pulled the scarf up over his mashed nose. There were the bruisers looming head and shoulders over the rest of them, both of them flushed with drink. One of them shouldered past the thief, who was gingerly peeling himself up off the floor where he'd been sitting. Spittle flecked his cloak as the brute hawked a fat brown gobbet at the ground next to Lee.
Bloody milk chasers.
On the other side of the knot of bodies outside the cellar door, the sellsword was disappearing down the alley. Lee shuffled past the crowd, his right arm bracing his ribs in case anyone jostled into him. He kept to the edge of the alley, where the shadows were long and his boots didn't splash through the runnel of rancid water that ran down the center. He followed the Qadari into the maze of back streets until the chatter of the crowd had faded to the dull semi-quiet that was as near to silence as things ever were at the edge. They were near the stone bridge. He could hear the susurrus of the falls in the distance. Near as he could tell, there were three places the spider's man might be going. The first, and least likely perhaps, but Lee still held out hope, was the new hideaway where they'd moved the brawler. The second was the spider's den. If he could force a meeting with the Gray Man, he could find out where Haytham was, or at least why they were shutting him out. If neither of those, he'd tail the sellsword back to where he was staying, if he wasn't bound for a brothel. If he knew where Randall slept, Lee could use that as the new starting ground to follow him back to Haytham or the spider. He rounded a corner and stopped dead. The alley was empty. A curse issued from between his clenched teeth. He raked his gaze along the alley for any sign of where the sellsword might have gone. Muddy boot prints leading to a door, a shadowy nook that he might have ducked into, anything. He reached behind his back to touch the knife in his waistband, just to assure himself it was still there. He snarled as a calloused hand curled around his wrist and wrenched his arm behind his back. A finger and thumb latched onto his neck at the base of his skull. Lee twisted in his grip as his attacker smashed him up against the brick wall and managed to impact it on his left side where his ribs weren't broken. Even so, the jolt tore a cry from his lips as his arm continued to twist cruelly between his shoulder blades.
Uyabaza,
the sellsword snarled, his breath hot on the back of Lee's neck.
Why are you following me?
He hooked two fingers on the edge of the thief's scarf and ripped it loose, raking Lee's broken nose and sending starbursts exploding across his vision.
You.
He waited for the sellsword's iron grip around his wrist to release, his breath hissing between his teeth, a thin trickle of blood streaming from one nostril. He didn't let go.
I'm sorry, Lee gasped, his eyes screwed shut. I'm looking for Haytham.
Randall didn't answer. Didn't release him.
You moved him. I haven't seen him.
Why? Growled the sellsword. Why are you looking for him?
Lee felt a few strands of the sellsword's matted beard graze his ear.
You tried to sell him to outlaws again.
The thief's heart plunged into his stomach.
I didn't.
The Qadari wrenched his arm even more savagely up behind his back so that his fingertips skimmed his own hair.
No more lies, boy,
he whispered, pressing him hard into the wall as he let go. Lee pried himself off the wall and sniffed, tasting warm blood on the back of his tongue.
I didn't have a choice,
he stammered, turning so that he and the sellsword were eye to eye.
He threatened my family.
Randall motioned to the thief's face. There were tiny pieces of shale embedded in the gauze on Lee's cheek.
And look where it got you.
Because I'm on your side, because I wouldn't give him Haytham.
I have no side,
the sellsword growled.
I go where Nashazim tells me.
Please,
Lee pleaded, hearing and hating the desperation in his voice.
Let me see Haytham. I can explain.
Randall shook his head.
You don't understand. He wants you dead, boy. Almost as much as White Rose.
He shrugged.
For once, we agree.
It couldn't have been worse if he'd punched him right in his cracked ribs. Lee slumped against the brick wall, his teeth clenched. The sellsword's face was as impassive as ever.
If this was Qadar, I'd have you whipped in the street and fed to the pigs.
He said it lightly, wistfully even.
Instead, I give you a gift.
His mouth tightened. He was evidently less enthusiastic about the gift than the pigs.
The fat man is dead. You are free.
The fat man.
Kill him.
A queer sense of relief flared low in the thief's belly where as far back as he could remember, there'd only been that inescapable sense of bitter doom, like a condemned man staring up at his own gallows. The sellsword produced a knife. Lee's knife, he realized, the one he'd had sheathed in his waistband. He hadn't felt Randall take it. He flinched away from the blade as the sellsword leaned in and sliced a single black lock of the thief's hair just below his ear. He dropped it in the runnel, and it swept between the green copper bars of a nearby drain and out of sight.
I see you again. I cut more than your hair,
the spider's man promised. He turned on his heel and swept down the alley. taking the knife with him. It was a long time before Lee shuffled home, his limbs leaden and ribs throbbing, wishing he'd just listened to Paul and stayed at hers, lulled to sleep by Amitha's sweet voice murmuring through the wall. Thank you guys so much for listening. It is always a tremendous pleasure to be able to share this story with you, particularly if you have been following the story from the very beginning. Thank you. It has been a lot of work, but seeing the people who are interacting with this story and enjoying this content really makes it worthwhile. If you're enjoying the story so far, you can do me a massive favor by thinking of one friend you know who's into fantasy, D&D, sci-fi, that kind of thing, and send them this story with your recommendation. All right, that is enough out of me. I gotta go drink some water, and I will catch you all next week.